This is VOA News in Washington. I'm Jeff Custer. Israel's military announced Thursday what it called new and improved measures to bring humanitarian aid into Gaza, including constructing a new land crossing into northern Gaza. Military spokesman Rear Admiral Daniel Hagari said in a video statement the new crossing would enable more aid to flow directly to civilians in the areas that have been challenging for trucks to access.
We expect 50 aid trucks a day to pass through. Following the cabinet's decision, we have worked with international partners to bring in more aid from the sea via the port of Ashdod, after which it will be transported down to the crossings into Gaza.
Hagari said with these new measures, the daily average of trucks carrying aid into Gaza can be expected to go up gradually from 350 per day to around 500 per day. International humanitarian groups have complained for months about barriers in bringing aid by truck into Gaza. Central and Eastern European leaders gathered in Lithuania Thursday for the Three Seas Initiative Summit, where the war in Ukraine was high on the agenda. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky attended the summit and said he would share details of what was going on in the battlefield in Ukraine. He stressed the need for additional military aid, particularly air defenses. Speaking as the conference opened, German Deputy Foreign Minister Anna Lehrmann stressed the need to continue standing with Ukraine.
More than 2 years after Russia's unprovoked full-scale war of aggression against Ukraine, it is more important than ever that we stand closely together, that we collaborate, that we stand behind our Ukrainian friends, that we stand in unity, and that we work together.
The Three Seas Initiative Summit brings together a dozen of the region's leaders to discuss enhancing cooperation in transportation, energy, and cybersecurity. This is VOA News. As his official visit to Washington continues, Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida addressed the U.S. Congress Thursday, stressing the importance of keeping a strong partnership between the two countries at a time of tension in the Asia-Pacific. Kishida says America needs to remain involved in global affairs, pursuing the belief that freedom is the oxygen of humanity.
The U.S. shaped the international order in the post-war world through economic, diplomatic, and military and technological power. It championed freedom and democracy. It encouraged the stability and prosperity of nations, including Japan.
Later on Thursday, Kishida will take part in a summit that will also include the Philippines at the White House. Poland's parliament Thursday was holding a long-awaited debate on liberalizing the country's strict abortion law. The traditionally Catholic nation has one of the most restrictive abortion laws in Europe. But Associated Press correspondent in Warsaw, Vanessa Guerra, explains the reality is a little different.
Many women, in fact, have abortions. They either travel abroad or, in most cases, they order pills online, which are sent often from the Netherlands or some other country. Nothing is really expected to change anytime soon. There are a number of politicians with a lot of power who are conservative, and they would not vote to change the law. One of them is the president, who has the power of veto. The other is the Speaker of Parliament, who has already banned the abortion advocates from even entering the gallery in the parliament to attend the debate today.
That was Associated Press Warsaw correspondent Vanessa Guerra reporting. A Czech Republic tourist has died after falling into the sea while apparently taking photographs of huge waves during a storm on the Canary island of Tenerife. Authorities say the 53-year-old man died Wednesday after in the town of Puerto de la Cruz. O.J. Simpson, a fallen football hero acquitted of murder in the trial of century, is dead at 76. AP correspondent Margie Zoroletta reports.
His family writes on X, formerly Twitter, that he died battling cancer. O.J. Simpson was a football hero, a Hollywood actor, and the subject of what became known as the trial of the century. Simpson played 11 seasons in the NFL, mostly with the Buffalo Bills. He was the first running back to rush for more than 2,000 yards in a season. After retiring, he went into broadcasting and acting, appearing in the Naked Gun movies and the Towering Inferno. His 1994 trial for murder in the deaths of his former wife and her friend gripped the nation with wall-to-wall live coverage. Simpson was acquitted but later found liable in a civil trial.
In Washington, I'm Jeff Custer. This is VOA News.
Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Right now, DRC has been involved to the deadliest war in the east part of the Congo, the genocide. And so many lives have been taken as a result of this war.
That was Claude Kabana, president of the Congolese community of Washington, D.C. Details coming up. Also, Mali's ruling military junta has suspended all political activities. And some 3.4 million people are in urgent need of humanitarian help in Chad. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Opposition candidates are accusing Chad's military ruler, General Mahamat Idriss Déby, of flouting election rules and launching his campaign before the official starting date Sunday. Déby, who seized power after the death of his father in 2021, is attempting to cement his rule with a victory in the presidential election next month. Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from a neighboring Cameroon.
Several hundred people, a majority from Chad's Patriotic Salvation Movement, or MPS party, applaud as transitional president General Mahamat Idriss Déby says more than 200 opposition political parties and about 1,000 civil society groups have agreed to support him in the May 6th presidential election. Déby is the nominee of MPS for the presidential poll. The general said on state TV Wednesday that if elected as Chad's president, he will continue to maintain peace and develop the Central African state. Déby says he is very happy that civilians agree he has good intentions to make Chad a country with a peaceful environment where people's rights and freedoms are respected. He says the 1,000 civil society groups and 200 opposition parties that support him should immediately go to the field, campaign and convince voters that he is Chad's best choice for president. Déby said he would fight what he called endemic poverty by creating jobs and funding youth agricultural projects. But Chad's opposition accuses Déby of illegally launching his campaign early. Lidzi Basenda is a presidential candidate of the Party for Democracy and Full Independence of Chad. She is the only female candidate in the race. She accuses Déby of disrespecting Chad's electoral code and manipulating civilians, opposition, and civil society groups to stay in office. Bisenda says nine opposition challengers have informed Chad's National Agency for the Management of Elections, ANGE, or ANGE, that Déby has launched campaigning for the first round of the presidential election before April 14, when campaigning is supposed to be launched officially as the Central African State's Constitutional Council planned. Chad's electoral body says it is examining several complaints from opposition candidates, but it provides no further details. Bessemda said Chad's 8 million registered voters should not be intimidated by Déby, who wants to continue the rule of his father, Idriss Déby Itno, who ruled Chad for more than 30 years. The 37-year-old Déby was proclaimed head of an army junta after rebels killed his father in 2021. The presidential election in May is meant to be a transition back to democracy. Déby initially promised an 18-month transition to elections after he seized power. He later appointed himself as the head of the transitional government. Opposition parties say he uses the military to suppress opposition voices of his leadership. Chad's opposition candidates say civilians should be vigilant and report all election malpractices to the country's elections management body. The opposition says it is calling on the international community to to take note that Deby is refusing to respect democratic norms by pushing for office before campaigns are launched. The nine candidates challenging Deby in the election, who include former opposition and pro-democracy figure Success Masra, now serving as transitional prime minister, said Deby does not want to lose his family's grip on power. Deby says he will respect the verdict of the ballot and hand over power if defeated. Chad's Constitutional Council says the first round of voting is scheduled to take place on May 6 and the second round on June 22, with provisional results due on July 7. Moki Edwin Kinzuka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
About 3.4 million people are in urgent need of humanitarian help in Chad following the arrival of large numbers of Sudanese refugees fleeing war. The French aid group Action Against Hunger says the eastern provinces are among the country's most vulnerable zones because they lack basic services, and the inflow of refugees has dramatically worsened the situation. The French news agency AFP says the United Nations warned in March that food aid for hundreds of thousands of people pouring out of Sudan would run out in April without international funding. The UN World Food Program appealed for $242 million in donations to avoid a disaster and continue supporting 1.2 million Sudanese refugees. Aid agencies say international funding only covers 4.5% of requirements. The vast Central African state was already one of the poorest in the world, with 1.4 million people displaced internally or from other neighboring countries. French President Emmanuel Macron recently said his country and other Western nations could have stopped the 1994 Rwanda genocide but lacked the political will to do so. In 2021, a French commission acknowledged the country bore some responsibility for the genocide. An estimated 800,000 people, mostly ethnic Tutsis, died in the violence perpetrated by Hutus but was not complicit. The killings began in April 1994 after a plane carrying then-president Juvenal Habyarimana, a Hutu, was shot down over Kigali. The Tutsis were blamed for downing the plane and killing the president and became targets in massacres led by Hutu extremists. France has backed Habyarimana's government, and the 2021 commission report says Paris ignored its violence and racism. Rwandan President Paul Kagame led the Tutsi Rwanda Patriotic Front in ousting the Hutu government and ending the killing. Rwanda currently is marking the 30th anniversary of the 100 days of genocide. David Monda, professor of political science at City University of New York, discussed the anniversary and France's efforts to mend relations with Rwanda with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi.
This is a good step for France to acknowledge its role in the genocide of 1994. However, you should note that Macron only said that France could have done more, but there's still a lot that has not been opened up publicly. Specifically, what kind of support did France give to the Habyarimana regime, military, security, intelligence, that led up to the violence and genocide of 1994? France was very much involved in supporting the Habyarimana regime, especially when the RPF started to come into Rwanda from Uganda. The second element of this is the French complicity in Operation Turquoise. So this was the French military operation just before the Hutu regime was defeated by the Rwanda Patriotic Front of General Kagame. And there are a lot of allegations and a lot of evidence that French troops actually used that operation as a way to allow the Interahamwe, who are the genocidaires, prime element to escape from Rwanda into the DRC when the Kagame RPF was getting into Rwanda. So as much as it's a first step in improving relations, I think it raises more questions than answers about France's role in this genocide.
But in a video message, French President Emmanuel Macron said he believes France and its Western allies could have stopped the massacre but lacked the political will to do so. Although Macron stopped short of an apology and denied complicity, Rwandan president said the findings could pave the way for a better relationship. What would it take to repair the damage in the relationship?
What I really think needs to be done is for France to acknowledge exactly what material support it provided to the Habyarimana regime, for a clear and honest investigation to be done to find out who brought down that plane that killed President Habyarimana and the Hutu president of Burundi on those fateful days before the genocide began. But I think France really needs to reconcile itself with its legacy, not only in Rwanda, but in French West Africa. And it's unfortunate that France at this point has its hands stained by this really horrible genocide. But the healing's begun. Questions need to be asked that need to be answered. I do also, however, need to add, Mohammed, here that the Kagame regime has also its own questions to answer, particularly around its role in the downing of that plane in relation to the extrajudicial killings of critics of the government. People who are suspected to have been genocidors have been summarily executed. Those who fled abroad, critics of the Kagame regime, have been eliminated.
That was David Mondo, professor of political science at City University of New York, speaking with VOA's Mohammed El-Chenawi. Multiple investigations have failed to conclusively find who shot down President Habyarimana's plane. In 2018, a French court threw out a probe into allegations that the mainly Tutsi Rwanda Patriotic Front rebels, which Kagame led, was responsible, citing a lack of evidence. Rwanda and other international investigations have reported it appeared the hardline Rwandan troops fired the missile that downed the plane. Kagame and his government have repeatedly denied the allegations Manda raised of extrajudicial killings and of suppressing critics. However, international human rights groups and the United States government have said there are credible reports of cruel treatments of critics, arbitrary detentions and killings and kidnappings of critics who have left the country. Mali's ruling military junta has suspended all political activities, citing the need to maintain public order. The decree from leader Colonel Assimi Goïta came after more than 80 political parties and civil groups on April 1st called for presidential elections as soon as possible and an end to military rule. The French news agency AFP reports that the junta banned the activities of a new opposition coalition in March, citing threats of disturbance to public order. The country has been ruled by the military since back-to-back coups in 2020 and 2021, with the worsening security situation compounded by a humanitarian and political crisis. In June 2022, the junta said presidential elections would be held in February and power transferred back to civilians on March 26th. But the elections were postponed and the military gave no further indication as to its intentions. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. And for more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. organizations this week delivered a letter to President Joe Biden, U.S. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, and Secretary of State Antony Blinken, urging approval of an initial 18-month temporary protected status, or TPS, and special student relief designation for Congolese citizens. The letter says clashes involving militant groups over territory and natural resources, extrajudicial killings by security forces, and rising tensions with neighboring Rwanda have led to the dire situation. Heavy fighting in mineral-rich North Kivu province has forced hundreds of thousands to flee their homes over the past few months. Claude Kamana, president of the Congolese Community of Washington Metropolitan, tells VOA's Carol Van Dam more than 6 million people are internally displaced in the Democratic Republic of the Congo.
The DRC has been going to one of the biggest
genocide after World War One. So this is very imperative that the Biden administration to grant TPS to Congolese descendants living in the D.C. area. I mean, we have the wars been going. If you look at it, we had that all the disaster of condition back in the DRC. And I think if they grant the TPS to the Congolese people, that will be a great cause to help the Congolese people living here with having a problem with their immigration status.
And as you point out, Congress created TPS as a mechanism to provide humanitarian relief to those who cannot or should not be returned when there's these types of dangerous conditions. But can you just tell me a little bit of what kind of the dangerous conditions your people are facing at home?
Absolutely, Carol. I mean, as you can see, right now, DRC has been involved to the deadliest war in the east part of the Congo, the genocide. And so many lives have been taken as a result of this war. And we know that, you know, if our people go back home right now, the country is not so safe. And also we have a disaster environment in the part of Congo. So when you factor all these, and we see that it's very unsafe right now for Congolese to go back to DRC. Right now,
you're the president of the Congolese community of Washington Metropolitan. How many people from Congo are just living right here in this area, in the DMV, which is Maryland, Virginia, and the District of Columbia?
Oh, I would say it's more than 2,000 people. I mean, Congolese right now who are having an issue with the immigration status. But overall, if we say just all the Congolese, it's more than 5,000, you know, Congolese living in the DMV area.
That's a lot. And so what you're saying is right now it's just not safe for Congolese people to return home for whatever reason. It's not safe right now.
No, it's not safe right now, especially in the eastern part of the DRC. It's not safe. Just traveling and all the news that we are getting from that part of the country, it's very, you know, very scary. You know, every time we wake up and you get this news, I mean, you just say, oh my gosh, so many lives have been lost.
Do you know people yourself, like in your own family, that are facing that kind of danger?
Not in my immediate family, but I have friends who have talked to me about this issue, and they have played the case here in the United States. But personally, in my immediate family, I don't have anybody that I can pinpoint right now. But if I look at my extended family, yes, for sure, yeah.
So if Congolese people get the TPS, what does it mean? What happens then?
I mean, if once we get the TPS, it's going to pave the way for the work permit. And it's going to keep this family together here, it's, you know, when it comes to deportation. So there's so many benefits that, you know, once we get this status approved to us.
That is Claude Kamana, president of the Congolese community of the Washington Metropolitan. He spoke to VOA's Carol Van Dam. As Russia... As Russia aims to expand its influence in Africa, it plans to create expeditionary forces consisting of 20,000 mercenaries, replacing the Wagner private military group. The Russian mercenary group has an established presence in a number of politically unstable African nations. Wolfgang Porstei, a senior advisor at Austria Institute for European and Security Policy, explained Russia's strategic objectives in Africa to VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi.
I doubt that Russia will be able to deploy 20,000 mercenaries to Africa as long as the war in Ukraine continues. They have even right now already quite some shortfalls with regard to infantry there. Nevertheless, I'm sure the numbers of this Africa Corps will be significant, will be even more than what Wagner had in Africa. And Russia's strategic objectives in Africa are the weakening of the Western influence on this important continent and to complicate the Western access to the vital resources in Africa, while profiting on the other side themselves. The mercenaries from the Africa Corps or Wagner before are Moscow's favorite tool to achieve this. The business formula is to provide military support in exchange for access to deposits of diamonds, gold, and uranium. The mercenaries from Russia have a very bad reputation. They're infamous for human rights violations. But Russia doesn't really care about this.
The Africa Corps publicly declared on Telegram that it had deployed 100 personnel to Burkina Faso to aid current leader Ibrahim Traoré in repelling Islamist insurgencies in the Sahel region. The new entity has been subsuming operations in Mali and Libya for several months, and negotiations to establish a Russian military base in Central African Republic are reportedly underway. Analysts at the Center for Eastern Studies in Warsaw suggested that the arrival of 100 Africa Corps personnel in Burkina Faso signals both an expansion and the formalization of the Kremlin military presence in the Sahel region, a cause that will be furthered by the installation of a military base in the Central African Republic. What would that mean for Russian influence in the African continent?
Wagner has been present in the Central African Republic at the latest since 2017. They are there in parallel to a European Union training mission. And while the EU mission is based in the capital, Bangui, focusing on security sector reform, strategic advice, operational training for infantry battalions, education of officers, especially of senior officers, the Russians equip the troops, provide basic combat training, and accompany their trainees in combat, very much like the American Army Special Forces, the famous Green Berets, do. In a nutshell, the Tsar government believes that the Russian mercenaries are simply more successful than what the European Union and the UN mission in the Tsar, MINUSCA, are able to provide. Burkina Faso right now is another, a new country on the list of the Russians where Russian mercenaries operate, after they have severed their ties with the United States and with France. The governments in all these countries, Mali, Burkina Faso, Central African Republic and others, prefer Russian military support because they provide tough fighters without asking questions about democracy and human rights. However, my point is, lack of the sophistication of military assets that the Russians can provide compared with the Americans and the French, especially in the areas of intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance, and as they do not care about economic support and state building, I doubt that this kind of support will be successful in the long run.
Wolfgang Porstei, advisor at Austria Institute for European and Security Policy, speaking to VOA's Mohamed El-Chenawi. The UEFA Champions League men's quarterfinals kicked off their first leg this week with some exciting results. Mokbilia Baro, VOA sports analyst, joins us to talk about it. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Mokbil.
Thank you for having me, Hayes.
So before we go there, there's been some breaking news today in the U.S. sports world. What has happened?
Absolutely. O.J. Simpson has died of cancer at the age of 76. He is arguably one of the best running backs of all time in pro football, American football, but unfortunately is more infamously known for the murder case that he was acquitted for of his late wife, Nicole Simpson. So,
In 1995, right?
Absolutely, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And he was acquitted.
Yes.
And when you say O.J. Simpson, you know, what rings in my head is if the gloves don't fit, you must acquit.
Absolutely. Johnny Cochran.
Amazing.
Yes.
So, anything else you want to talk about that, or should we move forward and talk about...
Absolutely. Let's jump into the games that were played on Tuesday and Wednesday in the quarterfinals of the UEFA Champions League. Arsenal against Bayern Munich ended up 2-2. Real Madrid, Man City ended up 3-3. And yesterday we had PSG playing Barcelona. Barcelona was able to win 3-2, and Atletico Madrid beat Dortmund 2-1.
I'm just curious, Mokbil, were any of the match results unexpected?
I would say the only one that kind of was a little unexpected maybe was the Barcelona versus PSG. PSG was playing at home, so we would have expected PSG to finish off and get the win before having to go back and play Barcelona back at home.
Mokbilia Baro, VOA sports analyst, thank you for your input.
Thank you for having me.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Pete Huntley, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.